Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Jikoji, into our session. This is our second day, so this is a good time to come. We're all still discombobulated, so it works really well. And it's wonderful to see old friends from many, many different ways, different times and places, all gathering here together. It's very touching to me. I robed in the little room just over there, just behind the corner, which was my room often, where I stayed and slept and kept that little rusty stove going in the winter. And just seeing that little rusty stove and remembering how to make a fire in it was so very touching. Coben used to stay in that room also. It's had, and probably some of you have too, it has a history. Everything here has a history, of course. And each of us has our own story. I talked to my oldest son just a few hours before I came here, and he said it's his favorite place in the whole world, and that I should give his greetings to everything and everybody. So I think he meant the quail and the laurels and the oaks and us. He built the bathrooms, so he has a hand here. My husband built those long tables. My youngest son cleared out all the dreck that was lying around, old pieces of machinery and beer cans and broken trucks and everything you can imagine. It was an amazing disaster area when we first arrived here. And in a very odd way, of course, it still exists in my brain. And so when I come and I see and touch and smell it again, it all comes back. All comes back in such a big way. It has such a history of lots of drama. There were a lot of people who did not think it was a good idea to create a place like this. It was too big a job, and this was such a jumped up place. Who would ever want to come here? It's way too far away, and we should practice in town. So there were a few renegades of us who thought living in the practicing in the woods, in the wilderness, had a special affinity to Zen, to what the teaching brings us, to be in touch with the beauty that nature is for us, the inspiration it is for us. So I've started talking about a chapter in Dogen called Only Buddha and Buddha. That's so plain, it's hard to understand what it is. Only Buddha and Buddha. But I remember a story of Suzuki Roshi giving a talk and explaining about Buddha and ending his explanation by saying, it's Buddha, 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 all the way around the hall, meaning the whole kit and caboodle. It's very hard to nail such a thing down, such an idea. But Dogen has a very interesting way of talking about this. And the first essential part of it that he explains is about how we don't have to worry about being perfect. That being stained or being a mess is what we actually are, basically. We're human beings and we're very limited in ways that we can imagine that a perfect human being would be. But then if we compare ourselves to that, well, we don't exactly live up to our imagination. Of course, each of us has her or his own idea about what that would be. And so it's all a sort of dream work anyway, pointless. But the translator, instead of calling it stained, calls it, or unstained, calls it being undivided. To be undivided actually what it is, what we are. We get caught up in senses of being divided and being isolated and being individual. But in fact, it's all undivided. And as he goes on to say, the whole earth, then, is our whole Dharma body, is our own Dharma body. That's why I think it's so important to be here, because we're so aware of the earth. So aware of the ground, of where we came from, where we're returning. When you say that the entire earth is the Dharma body of the self, words still cannot express it. When words cannot express it, would you understand there is nothing to be said? Without words, ancient Buddhas said something. We just said that. You get to a point where it's untalkaboutable. It's too big. And yet, there is birth and death, and there is death and birth. Death is entirely death, and birth is entirely birth. This is not so because you make it so, but because Dharma is like this. Therefore, when a Buddha turns the Dharma wheel, there is insight such as this and expression such as this. Know that it is also like this when Buddha manifests a body and awaken sentient beings. This is called awareness beyond birth. The manifestation of a body, of a life. A Buddha manifests a body and awakens sentient beings means that awakening sentient beings is itself the manifestation of the Buddha body. In the midst of awakening sentient beings, do not pursue manifestation. Seeing manifestation, do not doubt for awakening. In the midst of awakening sentient beings, the Buddha Dharma is totally experienced. An ancient Buddha said, "The whole earth is the real human body. The entire earth is the gate of liberation. The entire earth is the eye of Virochana. The entire earth is the Dharma body of the self." In the wonderful museum in Washington, D.C., what is it called? The one that has Whistler's mother in it and also a beautiful Virochana Buddha. Bigger than life, with a great robe, and it's arranged so that you first see the back of the robe, and it's covered with little scenes of human life. It has little rivers running through, and trees, and people, and villages. It's the whole earth on the body of Virochana Buddha. Stood there for the longest time. Of course. The true human body means your own true body. Know that the entire universe is your own true body, which is not a temporary body. If someone asks you, why do we not usually notice this? Say, just reflect within yourself that the entire earth and universe is the true human body. Or say, the entire earth is the true human body. Already, you know this. Also, the entire earth is the gate of liberation. Means that you are not at all divided from the moment, the ages, from mind, from the way. We are undivided, altogether undivided. And from words. This limitless and boundless experience is the entire earth. Even if you seek to enter or go through the gate of liberation, it cannot be done. How is this so? Reflect on the question raised. If you intend to seek outside what it is, nothing will be attained. So the question is, how do we live this undividedness? How do we manifest this Buddha body? It can't be done without paying attention. It can't be done without waking up. in Floating Zendo, we're studying the Lojong Chogyam Trungpa's version of the suggestions of different ways of practicing to keep ourselves awake and to understand awakening. That's a very helpful way of practice. There are the precepts that keep us awake. That's their function, as to remind us what a human life and body is and how to be of it, by it, with it, for it, in it. And there's the mystery of it, that the more we allow ourselves to admit the mystery of and the unknowability of us, that how we not only don't know others, but how we don't know ourselves as well. And that staying awake is about staying awake, first of all, to this, to being with this, honoring it, caring for it. There was a time when I was in the hospital and had surgery, and I was hurting, and I was lying there feeling like a little girl. And then I thought, I am a little girl. And I put my arms around myself, and I just rocked myself. I said, poor thing, poor thing. And I thought, you know, we should do that more often. Just hold and care for ourselves when things go bad, when things hurt. There's no point in raging against what's happening. There's no point in wanting it to be something else, but to give ourselves to it with all our love and care. That's what we can do in the middle of the mystery. Dogen goes on to talk about the mountains and the rivers, and how the mountains and the rivers also are us, and how they too are living and moving and having a life just like we are. And that too is how we are inspired by being here and caring for this place, holding this place and all natural places, and caring for them with great kindness and delicacy. It's a marvel to me to have seen the changes in the last 25 years since we first put our feet on this ground. The disaster area it was, with Buckminster Fuller little huts up in the woods and little cabins, falling down cabins, and a teepee up on the ridge, and sort of denizens of the land, living like the land and being very positive that it was their land, because only God owns the land. It's only God's land. So they can be here. And Coben said, come in and sit with us. And so that too, even that was a way of holding and caring for. That was one of the best lessons of this place for me. First idea is to throw the bums out, bunch of drug-crazed hippies. But they were just looking for a place to stay, just like we all are. And they found a way of thinking about it that maybe didn't make so much sense, but in the end, it worked out very well. So in our sitting, especially in Sesshin, but all the way through our life, in our morning and evening and middle of the day sitting, to hold ourselves in kindness as we hold ourselves in stability and alignment, to align ourselves with the whole of it, the whole earth of us, and be this. And then when we get up, we are still the whole earth and still aligned, and bring our ability into the world of human being and quail being and blue jay being, and create a life. We can either live on automatic and just go along with the flow, or we can create a life in our life and create something truly wonderful and beautiful and of great value and worth to the earth itself and all the beings of us. That's why we practice. That's the meaning of this. It's not really about me, any of the me's of us. It's about the whole kit and caboodle. The whole disaster Dido and Lori used to call it. So that's what I brought this morning. And there's time for questions and comments. Judy.
I read the New York Times online, and this morning I was amazed to read something that I didn't know about, but the United States and Russia have been exchanging information on nuclear development with the goal of protecting the Earth from asteroids. Unfortunately, this mutual cooperation between Russia and the United States has reached an obstacle because of what's going on in Ukraine. So they stopped doing it. But I have faith they will start again. And I think that's just wonderful, you know. Russia and the United States are working to protect the Earth from asteroids. I mean, wow, that's going in the right direction.
That is very well. That's amazing. And thank goodness. Yeah, there is more of an opportunity for that to happen than they have told us. They're finding out more about it than they knew. There's a lot of stuff out there. We're part of it too, of course, but yeah. Oh, thank you for that. That's great. Donna Lynn?
25 years ago when you came to Jokoji, perhaps you had some type of vision or goal for it. or not. And seeing it now, going forward, is the vision like being fulfilled? I mean, you kind of like implied that it has been in some ways, but what are ways that you'd like to see it become more a vision of yourself or the Coven or not?
Well, it's a very interesting question, actually, because in some sense we have no control over what's going to happen next. You know, anything could happen next, including an asteroid. You know? When this happened, it happened in a very sort of odd, typical Coven-ish kind of way, that we had our eye on another piece of property down a ways on Montebello Road. And Coven was very excited about it, and his wife was too. She played a Japanese musical instrument. I've forgotten what it's called. And Coven wanted to bring scholars over and have a kind of master's program in Zen or something like that, and bring people from Japan, the professors that he most respected. So he had a vision, and it was a beautiful place, and we went to a lot of trouble to get the use permit. It was really hard because the county didn't appreciate what we were projecting, and it was very tight with parking and all those logistical problems. And we finally got it all together, including raising the $200,000 that was being asked by the Quakers to buy it. When the Quakers turned around and they saw what we were planning and said to themselves, you know, we could use a really nice place ourselves. Why don't we put the thing on the market for $400,000 and then we'd have enough to build something in Palo Alto? So that's what they did. And that left us with $200,000 and no place to go. And so when the time came that we met together as a Sangha, by that time, in some strange, mysterious way, two pieces of property had shown up, one in town and one right here. One of the Quakers, actually, the one who had hosted us for Sashin for so long at Hidden Villa, found this place for us. And so then the Sangha got split because half the Sangha wanted the town place and the other half wanted this place. And so we decided we would do both. And those who, we could all practice in town and then we could all come and do retreats here. And so Coven said, well, there's nobody to do this place in the country. Who's going to do that? And some of us got together and thought, well, we could do it. Why not? Why not just let's put together a place where we could have sesshins. We could rent it to other people who needed a place because there's always a need for that. And it would be a place where Coven's particular way would be cultivated. And Coven would have a place to bring his professors. Harriet would have a place to do her music. And then Harriet and Coven got divorced and moved away. And here it was. And so then there was a whole question about selling it, and we put it on the market, and there was a whole kerfluffle about that, but in the end, we just cleaned it up and kept it. Use half the money to buy this place and fix it up, and half the money to buy Kanando in Mountain View and fix it up. And then it got a little more confusing because Coben gave the abbotship to Les K to be in charge of Kanando in town. And so the two sanghas, Les K then was transmitted by Suzuki Roshi, young Suzuki Roshi. And so it's a different lineage, cousins, but not direct lineage. And so there's a little bit different taste between the two sanghas. But as far as I can see, Coben's way is here. And my hope is that, and my conviction is that it will live on here. It just seems to be so alive in the air, in spite of all the comings and goings and the dramas and stuff that happens in any community. Still, I think the depth of untalkaboutable wisdom that Coben brought to us lives in us. And as long as there's one of us to sustain the practice here, I think it will be fine. But we said we hope it will be at least 500 years of development and growing, but who knows? And I always said when I was here, you know, it's fine if it will do everything we can to make it work, and if it doesn't work, it's okay. So otherwise you just go crazy. So I think it's held in that way now. And sometimes things are good and sometimes they're not so good, but there's a spirit here that lives. Thank you. That's a beautiful question. Chris?
I was just thinking about the early people that came up here to live on the land, you know, Ellen and boy, what are the two men that were up here? Elliot and Tim.
Oh, and Tim.
And, you know, those folks that held this space in the whole craziness of it, and how fortunate we were to have those people. And I just so appreciate your four men in your life helping to clean this place up, mm-hmm. and the way in which you are still here in a major way to mm-hmm. carry on that story and the truth of Coben's beingness.
Thank you, Chris. Same to you. We're both founders, right? With a big F. We dragged all that junk down the hill. Yeah.
I mainly just wanted to say it seemed like a good time, because you're talking about all the history, that Tim McCarthy was emphatic that I send his regards to you.
Oh.
And say hello from him.
Yes.
So I think Coben's Way is a lot of other places too.
It's in Ohio.
Here and with Tim. Anytime I'm with Tim in any capacity, it's like feel that resonance.
Yes.
And I'm wondering if you find that it's alive to it. Hokoji, they'll be practicing that.
Absolutely. You're going up there?
I'm going to be living in Santa Fe, so I'll be
perfect.
Practicing at Hokoji as much as I can.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah, Ian has it.
And for Red?
In Poorang, yes, go to Austria. It's great. Go to Switzerland. It's wonderful. Yeah. And there are little bits of Koban all over. Everywhere I went for a while when I was traveling, they would take me to the place of Koban's ashes, and I thought, oh my gosh, he's everywhere.
It just reminds me of the story, too, as I traveled one year with Angie to all Shoshins, literally all over the world that one year.
Yeah.
Every place I went, you know, I'd have just any little task, anything from, you know, serving or, I don't know, anything. And they'd always come up to me later in either broken English or Santa Fean or whatever. And they said, you're doing it all wrong. This is Koban's way of doing it. But it was so funny because Angie, you know, and learning it here. It's just, I just thought that was great. I said, for sure, everyone is part of his experiment. But they're adamant. That's not the way you do it. Koban's way is this way.
That happens here, too, I think. Can't be helped.
I'm learning to really enjoy it.
Yeah. Yes.
So what, we take a moment to maybe look at the, I've heard Koban's way expressed in this setting the last few minutes. So what, how would you characterize that as Koban's way?
I think it's what Dogen is talking about here, that it's embodiment of the Dharma, and that you can't really say what it is, but you recognize it. I guess if I were to put it in words, I would say, great wisdom and an apparent his whole character and personality was very complex. I mean, he really wanted to be a cowboy and loved riding horses and dressing like a cowboy, and he was considered such a great scholar that all his professors at the university begged him to come and stay and be a professor also. So he very, very deep knowledge of the Dharma in a scholarly way. And his devotion to Zazen is deeper than anybody I ever met. As a way of life. It's not just one of the things you do in Zen, but it is what makes practice practice. You think of him as being very gentle, very soft-spoken, and very kind, but not necessarily. He always was with people the way they needed to be with. So it depends. You know, I'm sure Tim has stories about. Tim lived with him, so he, I'm sure, knows, you know, the difficult side of, or the challenging side. He didn't let people get away with goo goo gaga. You know, a lot of people loved him and wanted to kind of sit in his lap. I being one of them, you know. So, you know, oh, Koban, you are so sweet. And let me be with you and you can tell me everything. And he wouldn't allow that. There's no way. And it felt, you know, hard. It was hard, but he needed to be. So, you know, that was part of his way as well.
Zeitgeist. Because I think so much talk about the past and the past, the beginning of this place, that the spirit of that time continues. And this area, the hippies, all that had happened in when they were younger, continues in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't a place like that around that I've been to so far. So that ripple, that wave, mm-hmm. that continues, you know, because of you in particular. I guess I would like to mention that it seems somehow unfortunate. I don't really know why, but whatever happened, Buske and this place, I am a part of that Sangha. And it is, wish that would somehow heal, or somehow some way of, because it is, it's more than cutting.
I agree. Yeah.
Make a visit there or somebody, or you can come there. Or somehow, some person could say, he's still, well, I don't want to know.
Thank you, Todd. You hit a sore spot. That's really a sad situation. That
the only feeling I have, but like I said, I don't necessarily. I don't. It seems so contradictory.
It is. Yes, I know. No separation. So there is no separation. We can keep the connection going, at least here. No, but
I was trying to think, how did this all happen to me? I can't remember why I was sitting here, and you said, "Oh, just come on up here. We're gonna have a sashin." I had no idea what a sashin was, and I'm sitting next to you, and you're like this solid rock, and I'm like in agony. And you, I don't know what you call it—the person who takes care of the habit. I was.
Nadisha, yeah.
And I couldn't handle it. 3 days I was dead, I couldn't handle it anymore. I'm sorry I abandoned you.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about time, isn't it?
Well, you're forgiven.
And the Native American leaders that would come here put those spirits to rest. And they're still there, but it's a heart-opening experience rather than the sense of crazy energy. And I felt like that happened to the residents that lived here too when they left the land, that there was some healing involved in being able to move on. And I also have a deep appreciation for this place being surrounded by the open space district and their way of taking care of the land too, and how they're a part here. So it's, I always come here feeling like it's such a special place because it's held by so many things, so many ways in which it calls to people and all of life. But this very feminine, accepting place that is a place for healing and wholeness. If you choose it.
Yeah. Well, on that note, maybe we should end. Thank you all. I'm so glad you could come. And you're welcome to join, if you like, for any part of the rest of this week. We're going to keep sitting until Friday morning. So the door is open. So I'll do the Bodhisattva vows before we go. Thank you.
Things are